Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Donna Dynasty. Nah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the dynasty.
Diagnostic, popped it, now your team is the topic. Eitan and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold, it is roll in a roll that I'm told, come a bowl to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks, yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks, yeah. How'd I get all of these stains on my seats, yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this, is it that, is it picks, is it bad? Do I even have a chance, do I got it in the bag? Let me know.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the dynasty. Nah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see. It's the dynasty
diagnostic. Nastic.
Thanks for listening to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast. Tune in every week for a thorough inspection of the dynasty landscape to learn how recent news affects your roster and to gather strategic tips and tricks to give your squad that turbocharged boost it needs. Please welcome your head technicians, Eitan Mosia and Sam Lane.
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to the shop. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast. My name is Eitan Mosia. His name is Sam Stompy Lane, and we are joined by an absolute pillar of the Dynasty community today. A king in the space. He knows that he's looking at me chuckling right now, but all these things are absolutely 100% true. We've got royalty in the building this time around, ladies and gentlemen, and we've got Ryan McDowell. What's going on, Ryan?
Hey, guys. I'm glad to be back on the pod with the best theme song in the industry. Love that. And a couple of the best hosts as well. Don't want to slight you guys.
No. Gabe deserves to go ahead of us. He's a musical genius. He's the voice of our generation. And then you have Eitan and Stompy.
I mean, honestly, yeah. The whole point of this podcast was really just to give Gabe a template from which to go ahead and add to that musical genius that has set him off so far on the career that he's chosen. But we are just we're just here to provide some space for him to do his magical work. All right, so we've got a bunch to get into. Obviously, the NFL draft just happened. This is our 69th episode of the Dynasty Diagnostics, so we have to make this as nice as possible. Ryan, I think that currently you reside in the state of Kentucky. Am I correct in that? Is that wrong? I'm just pulling that out of thin air.
Yeah, you got it. Bluegrass State.
Okay. Perfect. Also, blue uniforms for the Kentucky athletics squad, and on that team, Lynn Bowden Jr. absolutely blew the doors off of everything you possibly imagine. Running back, wide receiver, quarterback, utility player. I mean, he probably played fullback some snaps, probably a gunner a couple of times. This dude did absolutely everything and now finds himself with some decent draft capital in the third round of the actual NFL draft. I don't necessarily know if that's going to translate directly into fantasy relevance, but I mean, this has to be a best case scenario for where Lynn Bowden could have gone. What are expectations for a guy like Lynn Bowden in the Las Vegas Raiders system that already added a couple other wide receivers to pair with him?
Yeah. So he's obviously in a unique spot and he's a unique player. So, the story behind Bowden a little bit is he entered the season as a solid wide receiver prospect. He certainly was Kentucky's best wide receiver. And after a couple of injuries, and of course, after Kentucky had lost Benny Snell the previous season, it was really the Lynn Bowden show. They move him to quarterback position and he absolutely takes over, not from a passing perspective, obviously, but running that Wildcat offense literally and figuratively as the Wildcat quarterback and leading the SEC in rushing. So entering the draft, entering last weekend, I was really hoping for some day two draft capital for Bowden. Obviously, I was a fan as a little bit of a homer, but I thought that was huge for him to be able to land on that second day. The Raiders, you know, one of the big complaints with Josh Jacobs last year was they just never threw him the ball. They didn't give him that opportunity. They had DeAndre Washington. They had Jalen Richard at the time. They retained Richard, let Washington go. And now they've got Lynn Bowden, who they drafted as a running back. They announced him as a running back. Of course, that was certainly noteworthy. And my fantasy league has followed suit, moving him from a wide receiver to a running back on their site. So that's basically what he's going to be moving forward, at least in the near future in the NFL. And as a running back, I think he has a ton more value, not only playing out of the backfield, but for fantasy purposes, being classified as a running back, really easy to get lost in the deep wide receiver group, where he might have been ranked in the 60s to 80s at wide receiver, and now in running back, he's going to be a top 50 running back option, and I think he's going to be that pass catching back for the Raiders potentially from day one. You know, Jalen Richard is no slouch, so we'll see how that goes, but he's a guy that they just want to get on the field.
We discussed with Ryan Lopes last week that the Las Vegas Raiders are actually one of those teams that, weirdly enough, tend to use the two-back, two-tight-end pairing a bit more often than most of their contemporaries. They were third overall with about 18% of their plays coming out in 22 personnel. Now with the addition of Lynn Bowden Jr. to what Josh Jacobs can already do, they have multiple TEs on the roster in everyone they've added, along with what they had in Foster Moreau and in the starting tight end over there. So what do we think this Raiders team is actually going to do with a guy as versatile as Bowden? Do we expect him to be on the field in those 22 sets? And do you think that this is a situation where those types of formations tend to become more of the norm for this Las Vegas Raiders team?
You know, it's tough to say, and Ryan certainly, as kind of the Raiders guy, obviously knows more about the ins and outs of that team than I do. But I think last year, you look at the situation they were in, just trying to get as many playmakers on the field as they could after the Antonio Brown situation. They were basically left with Tyrell Williams as their wide receiver one. I don't think that's how anybody envisioned their season going. So you get Darren Waller with that breakout season. You get the rookie Foster Moreau, who looks like he can play, and whatever formation you need to get your best players on the field. I think this year, adding Henry Ruggs, adding Bowden, adding Bryan Edwards, I think they're going to have a lot more flexibility to basically run whatever type of offense they want. And for Bowden, I think the roadblock is just going to be Jalen Richard, because again, he has kind of proven himself in that pass catching back, that third down back type of role. And to me, the Bowden pick just shows that they're not going to give Josh Jacobs much opportunity as a pass catcher. I think that's probably bad news for us in Dynasty. He's a second round startup pick. And, you know, he's kind of looking like the next Derrick Henry, the guy who's just going to pound the rock, but not have that PPR upside.
It's kind of interesting, because that was kind of what Jacobs was known for coming out of, or at least what he was most recognized for, was his pass catching ability, and arguably was the best pass catcher in that class. And I mean, he got 27 targets last year, something like that. That's like wild to me. And yeah, I think a lot of people probably banked on him getting more targets. Then they bring back Jalen Richard, sign or draft Lynn Bowden, and it's just like, well, okay, maybe he's not going to get any targets this year.
Yeah, it's so tough to, you know, these guys are coming out of college. We look at what they did in their college career, and we basically just project that to continue in the NFL, and it's never that simple. You know, we've seen guys like Melvin Gordon and maybe Jonathan Taylor is the next in that line who were not really involved in the passing game in college, and then they turn into to solid pass catchers out of the backfield. And then there's Jacobs, and Sony Michel would be another guy kind of in that range that were used and saw some targets in college, and then it just, for whatever reason, did not happen, did not work in their NFL offense, and it hurts their value.
Absolutely. All right, so let's go into looking at the Raiders team a little bit more. Obviously, other moves were made. You just mentioned Henry Ruggs. Bryan Edwards is also there. I would expect Bryan Edwards to actually be the X in that offense if there is one. He seems the most profiled to go ahead and slot into that type of position. Do we think that from a fantasy perspective that we should maybe have these guys flip-flopped and looking at Henry Ruggs and Bryan Edwards just due to what we've seen Derek Carr do throughout his career so far with his low average depth of target?
Yeah, that's a great question. We actually just talked to Matt Friedman about that same thing. Of course, Ruggs is the guy going in the first round in most rookie drafts. Bryan Edwards typically going in the second round of these early rookie drafts. And I do consider Edwards the guy most likely to be their wide receiver one. We know what Ruggs can do. And his talent is unique in this class, the speed and potentially the playmaking ability. But I do think it's Edwards who's more likely to be kind of their prototypical wide receiver one. I'm still fine in the order that they're going. But I guess I would say I wouldn't take Edwards ahead of Ruggs in a rookie draft, but I would prioritize getting Edwards versus getting Ruggs, if that makes sense, right? Like I might want to move up in the second round to make sure I get Bryan Edwards versus letting somebody else take Ruggs in the late first.
I mean, the other aspect of that is Ruggs and Tyrell, well, I mean, Ruggs, while better, I mean, they're really kind of the same wide receiver. I mean, Tyrell Williams, even last year with a lower or with a guy who doesn't necessarily throw down the field, was still ranked 16th in yards per reception and 7th in yards per target. And he, I mean, same thing last year and 13th and 13th. So he's more of a deep ball guy, and that's what you expect from Ruggs now. Edwards is the unique one there. I mean, you have Ruggs, Tyrell, you have a lot of redundancies there where it's like Ruggs and Tyrell, you have Aguilar and Hunter Renfrow, and then you just have Bryan Edwards there alone as that possession type of guy. So yeah, I mean, I agree. I think Bryan Edwards, probably one of the more underrated wide receivers coming out. We were all kind of head over heels for him 2 years ago. And then all of a sudden, like, he just like kind of a blah guy before the draft. And I think now after the draft, you have to really recognize him. And he's probably going early second right now in terms of rookie drafts.
Yeah, I really think it's just a situation where injury just happens to come at the worst time for a guy like Bryan Edwards. Had that not occurred, then I think that we see his stock tremendously uptick in this particular draft. He was just such a unique talent. He had a breakout age at such a young age. He was a 1,000-yard producer, I believe, multiple times in college. So this is a guy that we've seen get it done. It's just been a matter of whether or not he can stay on the field. And I think for that reason, the Las Vegas Raiders got a steal in regards to Bryan Edwards. But we're going to have to move on to the next exciting rookie that we have to talk about here. And it's the guy that I was personally very, very high on. I probably had him as my wide receiver three coming into the draft. I think that stock probably stays the same, but I'm a little bit more concerned about his potential landing spot about his actual landing spot than most are. A lot of people are pegging him for a huge amount of targets, are thinking that he's going to be a very, very productive wide receiver coming to the league in his rookie season. And I don't necessarily disagree with the fact that I think he did find himself in a place to be a good fit in long-term. But if I'm looking at what this team wants to do and what this team has done thus far and how they actually move their offense, the Minnesota Vikings only had about 29.2 pass attempts per game last season. In fact, in the last three games of the season, that 29.2 dropped to 27, which was 30th in the league overall. Adam Thielen, if his health isn't an issue this year, and I understand that can definitely go both ways, but if his health isn't an issue this year, he's going to get a large amount of targets. Irv Smith, you would expect him to have an uptick in targets. Kyle Rudolph, you would expect 40 to 50 targets going to Kyle Rudolph. I just don't see where Justin Jefferson has a pathway to 100 targets and a pathway to immediate fantasy relevance in this type of system. Am I overthinking this? Is this a little bit of me kind of missing the forest for the trees? Or is this a real thing that has you a little bit concerned about at least the immediate impact of a guy like Justin Jefferson on the Minnesota Vikings?
I'm not really concerned, obviously. I mean, we know, of course, they traded away Stephon Diggs, so that starting opportunity is wide open. I mean, the depth chart is ugly for the Vikings right now, along with Adam Thielen at the top. I mean, really, the only other player, wide receiver of note is Olabisi Johnson. So, I mean, Justin Jefferson is a starter there right now. He was a starter a week ago when he got drafted, just automatically. Now, even though they lost Diggs, they lost, you know, Laquon Treadwell. I mean, he was a depth guy for them. They only lost about a quarter of their targets, which is kind of league average right now. So I think they lost 110 targets. And, of course, most of that coming from Stephon Diggs. So I do think there's a path for Jefferson to get close to 100 targets. I agree with you. I think we see Irv Smith with an uptick, but maybe that just comes from maybe that just comes from Kyle Rudolph there. But what's really noteworthy to me, and this comes from John Daigle at RotoWorld, the Vikings lost 47% of their air yards. So they're looking for that big play. And we know, of course, most of that came from Stephon Diggs as well. That's the second most lost air yards of any team, only behind the Jets. So I think not only is there a path for opportunity for targets, but there's an opportunity for big play targets for Justin Jefferson.
I think it's the more interesting question is who's going to play in the slot. Justin Jefferson excelled in the slot last season for LSU after not really doing a whole lot the previous three seasons. So it'll be interesting because we know that Adam Thielen, I think, takes about 45% of his snaps from the slot. I'd have to look that up.
He didn't last year, but in the year that he was the best fantasy asset two seasons ago, yeah, most of his snaps came from the slot. Yeah.
So, I mean, he excels in the slot too. So it'll be interesting to see how they make that work with two guys who do most of their jammings from the slot.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting situation out there. I do think that maybe long-term Jefferson can be a replacement for a guy like Adam Thielen. I do like what Ryan was saying about him being a direct replacement to Stephon Diggs and that offense just based on need more than anything. I have my own worries, but I can definitely see where everyone's coming from with at least having that position solidified. And the most important thing that you want from a dynasty prospect is the ability for them to show their coaches that they, again, the next year don't need to go out and draft somebody to directly replace somebody like them. So at least he's going to get early opportunity to go out and show them that he was a decent draft pick and that they can work on filling other holes potentially in the draft or in free agency going into next season. Now let's move on to another really, really hot rookie question that we have going around a little bit with Bashard Perriman, the only person really to challenge for the wide receiver one duties in New York, at least in terms of the Jets. What's the expected range of outcomes for a guy like Denzel Mims? The explosion is obviously there. He wowed at the combine. Before that, I don't know if he was on many people's radars in the same way that he was immediately after the combine. But now he looks to be locked into a true wide receiver one role. Now, this is an Adam Gase offense. But this is also an offense that we expect to be down and down early often in NFL football games. We expect them to have to throw themselves into contention more than once. So do we think that Denzel Mims landed in a spot that maybe solidifies him as somebody that should at least be within a shout of that wide receiver three, wide receiver four status in rookie drafts at this point?
Yeah, so Mims is an interesting case. He entered the offseason, certainly not off the radar, but I mean, I think he was viewed as a second or third round rookie pick, kind of in that just a guy range, right? And he dominates the Senior Bowl, and people are starting to take notice. And then he backs it up and dominates the combine as well. And now that he's getting first round talk, not only in rookie drafts, but in the NFL draft as well. So the hype has just kind of been slowly building on this guy all season or all offseason until last week when he falls to the late second round. Some people thought he would be a late first rounder, and his rookie ADP has actually dropped a little bit from based on our mock draft ADP data over at DLF. And part of that is probably the landing spot. I do think there's some concerns about the Jets. Part of that is maybe that lower than expected draft capital. So normally I'm avoiding all Jets. I'm avoiding anybody Adam Gase is going to have any contact with. I just want no part of it. But the situation here, the opportunity, I think, is and mixed with the drop in value. Right. Like I don't want to take Mims in the first round, but based on our ADP, I don't have to. He's looking like 2-3, 2-4. And that's a spot. That's a range where I'm more comfortable with him. And you're right. Looking at the Jets offense, Rashad Perriman is a guy they took a shot on. We kind of know what he is. He's that deep threat, that big play waiting to happen. And then Jamison Crowder just coming there right off the line of scrimmage out of the slot. He's looking for those short targets. Mims is kind of a combination of both of those guys. And I think he could be better than either one of them. So I love the opportunity. If he's sitting there 2-3, 2-4, it's a pretty easy player for me to pull the trigger on.
So they did sign Josh Doctson as well, I believe. So let's just,
wide receiver one, clearly.
Pump the brake. Okay. Crowder was a guy that Josh Darnold targeted a ton last season. Robbie Anderson as well. And like you said, he's kind of a mix of like both of those guys. I mean, I'll say this, his most comparable player on Player Profiler is Chris Godwin. That doesn't get you a little bit excited. I don't know what to tell you. So, I mean, if he could play big slot in an Adam Gase offense, we've seen slot receiver be very effective in Adam Gase offenses from Landry now to Crowder. If he could play like a big slot, he could be in for a great rookie season. Regardless, we know Sam Darnold is willing to throw deep. Mims is a speed guy. He's got good burst as well. So, I mean, I don't know how Mims doesn't, I think, exceed expectations in year one because of how diverse he can be in that. But then again, it is an Adam Gase offense, so I shouldn't say that ever.
Yeah, Denzel Mims, guys, this is why he's hot. This is the reason. This has to be the reason. I love pretty much everything that you guys had to say on him. I would just say that, you know, I do think ideally – big slot or a guy running down the seam is probably how he's best used. I just don't see how that merges with what they already have in terms of the roster that they've already put together in New York, with Jamison Crowder being there and kind of occupying that slot role, and the potential return of a guy that has been long forgotten in Chris Herndon. So it's going to be, I think, putting a square peg into a round hole kind of situation with him. I don't know where I read it, but somebody described Mims as having all the tools but no toolbox. And I kind of see that here in the sense that he might be forced to play out of position initially, and that might hold his value down. But the opportunity there is clear just because in the same vein as the Minnesota Vikings, there just isn't another dominant wide receiver or dominant couple of wide receivers to really keep him from seeing a big share of the total targets available. So that's going to be interesting to see. So we just wet your whistle on a little bit of rookie talk. I didn't even bother to have some sort of introduction to get into that because I figured that's what everyone was expecting on this particular Dynasty Diagnostic episode right after the draft. So we're just going to keep it going. We're just going to keep it going, guys. We're going to jump in to our five-point inspection, which is just really more questions on some of these rookies that got drafted very recently. And we are currently going to start drafting in many of our leagues. Now, a rookie that a lot of people are propelling very high right now because of the landing spot, I imagine, and because of the expectations of what he would be even before the draft took place, is a guy named Cam Akers. And I can see it. I can see why that you would be very high on a guy who was successful in college despite having one of the worst offensive lines possible during most of his time at Florida State. That said, I don't necessarily know if things have changed all that much from him having to battle through an awful offensive line to gain some level of success. 2 years ago, the Los Angeles Rams had 5.49 adjusted line yards per Football Outsiders. That put them at number one. They were the best offensive line in the league in 2018. In 2019, things changed a little bit. That 5-plus adjusted line yards average actually dropped down to 4.27 adjusted line yards, making that only the 19th best run blocking line in the National Football League. Now, I am of the opinion that we could probably say that this Rams team is somewhere between the last two seasons in terms of their total offensive line play. Maybe we're going to see them be a top 12 unit, maybe something in that range. Is that enough to really, with the presence of Daryl Henderson, propel Cam Akers to where he's going currently in Dynasty rookie drafts?
So, I mean, first of all, I won't pretend to be any kind of offensive line guru, right? Like, I'll save that for Brandon Thorne and these other guys. But it has to be a concern. And the real concern for me is that they didn't get any better, right? Like, all as fantasy players, as dynasty players, all the talk from the draft or a lot of the talk from the draft has been, I can't believe the Packers didn't draft a wide receiver. And that's a conversation worth having. But in the same vein, the Rams didn't draft an offensive lineman, and it's unbelievable that they didn't. So not only did they not get better by adding an offensive lineman, they're in salary cap trouble, right? They make these big splash moves, they trade away draft picks, they give long-term contracts to these impact players, and I get all that, but now they don't have a way to fix the trenches. And that's going to hurt Cam Akers. So right now, Cam Akers did get a little bit of a boost based on landing spot, based on draft capital. I mean, most people had him as the fifth running back, and he was the fourth drafted ahead of J.K. Dobbins, the presumed Rams starter. So all of that is helping him. He is he's actually tied for the fifth player being drafted in our rookie ADP, tied with C.D. Lamb. So coming off the board in that 5-6 range.
I mean, I'm trying to compare their depth charts. I'm pretty sure they have not actually changed in terms of, they haven't changed once with their depth chart, ranking 31st by PFF. Like Eitan said, they rank 19th in adjusted line yards. Todd Gurley just came off of his arguably least efficient season of his career. But I mean, we could go back to 2015 when he had an atrocious second season, but in the past 3 or 4 years, his least efficient season, mind you, he did have his knee issues, but part of that was the offensive line. The offensive line just was not and is not good. So he could turn into a Lev Bell type where they don't really do well in their first season. And then hopefully the team makes the proper adjustments gets a couple offensive linemen, and he does better in the second season. So he might be a buy low-ish type of guy next at the end of this season. Because I don't know what you can really expect from Cam Akers, a rookie behind a bad offensive line this year.
Yeah, with the shift to an expected two tight end system, does that perhaps in a way paper over some of the cracks that the Rams might have at offensive line in a way that benefits guys like Jared Goff and Cam Akers over the course of the season?
I mean, it can't hurt, obviously, but again, kind of like we were talking about with the Raiders, that move to two tight end sets that we saw late last season, and I guess we can expect it to continue. That was out of necessity, right? I mean, the receivers were hurt, Cup was hurt, Cooks was kind of in and out of the lineup with the latest concussion, so they didn't have much choice but to get all these guys on the field, all of their pass catchers. I mean, Gerald Everett and Tyler Higbee are nice. I don't know if I want to count on either one of them to stay in and block too much. I just, again, I'm not an offensive line guy, but those guys are known as pass catching tight ends, not necessarily strong blockers.
Absolutely. Certainly more Gerald Everett than anyone. All right, so let's move on to another move that the Rams made that was interesting, though. Van Jefferson brought in to, expectedly anyway, replace some of the production that is going to be lost from going ahead and having Brandon Cooks leave the team in favor of a move to the Texans. Now, I don't necessarily think that those guys play the same position. In fact, what's weird to me is Van Jefferson seems as a replacement, or at least somebody in the same mold as a guy they already have on the team in Cooper Kupp. He's an underneath receiver. He is a route runner that, you know, he spent a lot of time in college, and because of that, he had the experience, I believe, enough to go ahead and be more polished as a route runner. Some of the same parallels maybe you can have with a guy like Calvin Ridley. I don't necessarily know how you justify this move with the other issues that you have on your offensive line, with the other issues, with the other holes that you have on your team. But what does this do for the Rams? Does this mean that Cooper Kupp is unlikely to be re-signed, or does this mean that maybe they're just kind of throwing shit at a wall and trying to figure out what sticks?
I wish I knew. You know, I don't know. I don't know what it means. I don't think very many people expected Van Jefferson to be a second round pick, especially to this team. I totally agree with you. They already had Van Jefferson. They already had the old underneath receiver in Cooper Kupp, and one that was very successful. So he's certainly not a Cooks replacement. Matt Kelly talked about it this week on my show on Dynasty Blueprint, that with that second round pick, they could have had Ezra Cleveland, who was projected to be a potential first round pick at offensive tackle. And they passed on him. They passed on a lot of players who could have made an immediate impact for Van Jefferson. So, I mean, none of that is a slight on Jefferson, who's gaining quite a bit of dynasty value. He moved up about a round in our ADP from pre-draft to post-draft. So I get the idea of fantasy players taking a chance on Jefferson. I don't think it makes a lot of sense for the Rams, though.
No, I mean, you have Josh Reynolds. You seem to be wanting to go to a two tight end set. What is what is a wide receiver in the draft going to do? I mean, if you're looking for depth, go sign somebody. You have other holes. Like you said, I mean, offensive line is a huge hole right now. And not only does that affect your running game, but it affects your pass game as well. It's not like Jared Goff is going to be the guy that escapes pressure and stays upright. So there have been a lot of bad moves this offseason. Notably bad moves. We saw multiple in the draft. We saw the Bill O'Brien, DeAndre Hopkins trade. Like, I don't know what's going on in the front office of these guys, where it's like, are you trying to make like these risky moves because all of a sudden we're going into an analytics type culture and you have to take risks sometimes, or I don't know what's going on. It was not a good move for the overall benefit of this team. I guess I don't really understand where Van Jefferson fits in at this point.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if anything, it's just a cap forward thinking move for the Rams and potentially having some leverage over having to re-sign a guy like Cooper Kupp in a year's time. But yeah, I'm with you guys. I just think that this is a redundant move added to a roster that honestly, I think needed a lot more at other places. Ezra Cleveland is a prime example of that. But now let's kind of take a little bit of a walk over to our next question here. Now, as fantasy players, as fantasy gamers, as dynasty owners in particular, we're always running out to best case scenarios with all of these rookies. We're assuming that every rookie that has got drafted is going to be an all-star and is going to start over the incumbent immediately, and that these guys are just going to disappear into dust the moment that these rookies touch an NFL gridiron. Now, sometimes it works that way. It doesn't often work that way. And I think in these couple of situations that we're about to talk about now, maybe they're a little bit different because of the exact moves that these particular teams made, but the incumbents still did provide some value to their teams last season and in the last couple of seasons. Are Damian Williams and Marlon Mack going to completely disappear because of the presence of Jonathan Taylor and Clyde Edwards-Helaire? I do think that maybe a split more in the 60-40 range maybe is a little bit out of place just because of the Indianapolis Colts, number one, going ahead and trading up for Jonathan Taylor, and then the Chiefs making sure they got that fifth-round option in drafting CEH in the late first round. But do we completely expect the roles of both Mack and Damian Williams to be obliterated in those offenses? Do we think that these rookies are here to take over right now?
Well, I think if we're expecting these guys to totally disappear, we're kind of getting caught in the same trap that had us trusting guys like Mack and Williams and Ingram in the first place. Because I think a lot of dynasty players, even though we have so much evidence against this and to the other side of this, we still just kind of have a mindset of one running back backfields. And that's just not really the case. I mean, 90% of these teams are going with a committee at this point, getting multiple guys involved. And in some ways we haven't really adjusted. You know, pre-draft, we look at guys like Marlon Mack and think that they're safe, when really that's just not the case. It should be a reminder that outside of your very elite top tier running backs, these guys, their jobs are always on the line. Even Aaron Jones, who had a breakout season last year, the Packers bring in the second round running back, and now the conversation is already, maybe Aaron Jones is not re-signed. Maybe they just let him walk and give the job to Dylan. So it's a tough spot for dynasty, because you've got to have running backs. You know, that's kind of the trend of the past couple of years, is the running back position as a whole gaining more value and teams building around those. But then there's so many players, the majority of players, that are risky investments.
So because of this, again, are maybe going with our better instincts and seeing that this doesn't necessarily need to be a full one back type of picture with these running backs. Do we as dynasty owners maybe start to change what we do on a year-to-year basis? Should we always constantly, year in, year out, regardless of whether or not we have starters that we think are going to be around for a while, be drafting running backs in the top of our rookie drafts pretty much year in, year out, just trying to replenish that before it becomes such a huge need that maybe is a little bit more difficult for us to fill down the line?
I wouldn't say that necessarily, just because every class is different. I mean, again, looking forward to the 2021 class, The running backs there are not strong as a whole. And basically, if we hadn't had these couple of guys, Travis Etienne and Chuba Hubbard, go back to school, and you can throw Najee Harris in there as well. If those guys had been part of this class, the 2021 running back class would be a disaster. So no, I wouldn't say you always have to draft running backs at the top. I know some dynasty players have that mindset. For me, I'm just looking best player available, basically, and the one that fits my team. And this year we have the flexibility to do that because it's so deep at both running back and wide receiver. But what I would say I would be doing is taking shots on guys in the third round of rookie drafts. And there's plenty of options this year to do that. You know, guys like Anthony McFarland, LaMichael Pirine, DJ Dallas, Darrington Evans, all of those guys landed in spots where they could see playing time in the near future. And that's, you know, if I'm going to kind of lay a blueprint or a plan to it, to say, always do this, that's what it would be. Always take shots on those depth running backs in the later rounds of rookie drafts.
I love it. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you just never know what injury is going to occur. And when you look at you got to take a look at depth charts. I mean, the Steelers, for instance, obviously they drafted McFarland because they don't really believe in Benny Snell and Jalen Samuels all that much to back up Connor. I think that's one thing that people need to look at is depth charts. Another one that's interesting is, was it Keyshawn Vaughn went to Tampa? Now, I don't think he necessarily steps into a three-down role, but very easily into a pass-catching role with a coach that knows how to use pass-catching backs and with a quarterback that knows how to use pass-catching backs. So that's my advice. Repeat it one more time. It's pick up those depth running backs that maybe don't have a clean path to touches, but are in line if somebody gets injured or they prove themselves in this offseason.
And also hedge your bets at the top. I mean, we've talked about these running backs coming in and taking other jobs. The same thing could happen to them in a couple of years. And then right now, as we were saying with the committee backs, there's always going to be competition for touches in their backfields, regardless of kind of what that team does at the draft or really in free agency year to year. So just make sure to at least always have the quantity to be able to get over those unforeseen situations where maybe a guy that you expected to hit early isn't quite doing it or a job is in danger really, really unexpectedly. So now let's go on to who has the better landing spot? Tua Tagovailoa or Justin Herbert? I mean, I feel like before the draft, looking at these two landing spots, obviously I would want the Los Angeles Chargers as the one of choice because, I mean, Keenan Allen, Hunter Henry, Mike Williams, and then they could have gone anyway in the draft. It didn't turn out that they really wanted to add to that group all that much, but they could have. But when you compare that to what has actually taken place in Miami, with Tua Tagovailoa being the pick, and then they went tackle after that. They still have Preston Williams. They still have Mike Gesicki. They still have Devontae Parker with his sixth-year breakout still on the team. That looks like a really, really enticing situation for me as well. I'm a little bit even higher than Tua Tagovailoa than I might have been before the draft because I think he has the better landing spot of the two. And this is not even saying that he was in direct comparison with a guy like Justin Herbert. I'm talking about in comparison with Joe Burrow. But, I mean, looking at, let's say, all three of these quarterbacks right now at the top of the draft class, is there a particular landing spot that gets you most excited for the guy that's going to be taking the snaps under center?
So I would say I think all three ended up in really, really good landing spots, really good situations for their games. Both Herbert and Burrow, you look at the depth chart, you look at what they've added this offseason. And in the Chargers case, they franchise tag Hunter Henry. They give Austin Eckler a new contract. like you said, they didn't really draft anybody. They added, Joshua Kelly at running back, along with Herbert in the draft. And then in the Bengals case, just that pretty loaded wide receiver group. And then they add T. Higgins to that. So on the surface, really excited about the landing spots for both Burrow and Herbert. But to your case, I think Tua might be the choice here, not necessarily because of the pass catchers or the offensive weapons, but just because of the organization. I'm just trusting whatever Miami does over anything that Cincinnati does. And that's an easy choice. And the same goes for the Chargers. They've loaded up on these offensive playmakers, but they also refuse to pay anybody. They have no fans. They don't really have a place to play. Both the Bengals and the Chargers are just hard teams to trust when it comes to a team management or decision-making standpoint.
I'm going to say I don't care what the landing spots were because it was going to be two and ahead of Herbert regardless. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's nice that, like Ryan said, the organization is seeming to turn around here. So they get Tua, and then they get two guys to guard Tua. And I'm sure that Andrew Luck and Kyler Murray were crying at home for what could have been or what could be. But yeah, I mean, honestly, Ryan is right. I mean, all three landed in great spots. Burrow's likely going to be the guy right out of the gate. So he's going to be probably the rookie QB1 next season, but I think Tua's ceiling overall is higher than all three of them. Not to say Joe Burrow isn't going to be a good quarterback, but Tua, I think his ceiling is higher than anybody. So in Superflex, I would consider taking Tua 101, actually, because if you're really relying on a rookie quarterback to compete, you're probably not in the best of situations unless like you're that one like QB3 away. But really, if you're relying on a rookie quarterback to compete, you're probably not doing so hot. So drafting Tua in a super flex, you could end up having a superstar by year two.
Just to kind of give what Ryan was saying about the Dolphins organization being superior some credence, I'm just going to give a short catalog of what the Dolphins have done this offseason that have people believing in them so much. First of all, they have now, from seemingly nothing, one of the best defensive backfields in the NFL with the signing of Byron Jones. I believe they drafted another cornerback in Degmene or something like that in the draft. They already had Xavien Howard, I believe is his name, at CB, which was one of the best cornerbacks in the draft. So they just added to his strength there. They drafted tackles for Tua. They drafted Tua and didn't have to trade up for Tua. And they didn't spend any draft capital on a running back early like we assumed that they would. They're content with going into the season with Jordan Howard and with Matt Breda. I think all of these moves just show you the type of quality running the top of that organization. This is an outfit that has a long-term mindset, and that is something that you don't often see in the NFL. What you often find is general managers get themselves into situations where they need to win. They need to win in one or two seasons, so they make a lot of short-term decisions or a lot of decisions that are going to benefit them greatly in the short term, but then damage them long-term, whether that be via cap or other things. The Miami Dolphins have fallen in none of these traps whatsoever, and I think that's why it's so easy to believe in where that team is going long term. I think the Buffalo Bills are another organization of the last couple of years that have kind of changed the perception of what that team was in the NFL, and I think they're kind of an example for what Miami might be able to turn themselves into in very, very short order from being one of the worst teams in the league for the last few seasons. So now let's get into Jalen Reagor. Jalen Reagor is a guy that I think has to have at least seen his stock improve a little bit in the draft. Maybe not all that much. I know you guys have a superstar working at DLF and Ray GQ that put Jalen Reagor's name on the map. But I mean, he landed in Philadelphia. Philadelphia has maybe three games of DeSean Jackson this season, maybe four games of Alshon Jeffrey this season, and then tight ends to compete with Jalen Reagor for targets. I don't see anybody else in that offense that is going to really put any type of damper on the amount of targets that Jalen Reagor could receive. That is also a team that is amongst league leaders in total pass attempts. They like to throw the football. So I just think that he's in line to receive a massive amount of targets. If you are somebody, if you are a team that needs wide receiver two production this season, is there even a conversation that you would have taking Jalen Reagor over Jerry Jeudy, over CeeDee Lamb this season, just with the amount of targets that he probably has incoming?
I get the conversation for sure. He's my wide receiver three in this class, and that did change. He flip-flopped with Justin Jefferson, who we spoke about earlier. So the landing spot for me and the draft capital, honestly, did impact his ranking. I was a little concerned he would be one of these guys that would slide. I thought he might be the guy in this class that fantasy players liked and the NFL didn't like. And of course, that was not the case. I'm glad of that. But you look at the Eagles last year, and we know it just all fell apart for them. D-Jax got hurt. Alshon got hurt. Aguilar got hurt. They were relying on a converted quarterback at the end of the season with the playoffs on the line. Basically, Alshon Jeffrey led that team with 70 or led the wide receiver group with 73 targets last year. Aguilar 69, Greg Ward 40. Aguilar, we know, has already gone to the Raiders. You said maybe we can get a handful of games from Alshon. I don't think he even makes the team. I think they end up just cutting him. So I don't think he's an issue at all. I've heard some people say that Jalen Reagor's just a deep threat, that he's just a speed guy. And yes, he is known for his speed, but he's already shown he can be the wide receiver one for a team. And I know that was a college program, obviously, but he's already been the guy who saw a ton of targets, saw the majority of the targets for his team. And I think he's going to do it again in Philadelphia. Even though they added several wide receivers over the draft weekend, including a trade for Marquise Goodwin with the Niners, I think Reagor is already that team's wide receiver one. And really his competition for targets comes from the tight ends, comes from Ertz and Goddard.
That was going to be my next question was, okay, so which tight end are we not investing in this season?
Yeah, I still want both of them. I think they were both tight end ones this year. I wouldn't be surprised if that changed. Again, that usage kind of came out of desperation last year with wide receiver just exploding on them, or imploding, I should say. But I think they saw what those guys can give, and they're two of the team's best three talents when it comes to as far as pass catchers.
But I mean, I think, like you said, if Alshon doesn't make the team, I mean, there's still plenty of targets to go around.
Sure.
He was pretty divisive coming into the draft, I think. I mean, a lot of people loved him. A lot of people didn't really like him. Like you said, draft capital and his showing at the, or his disappointing showing at the combine, or cancels that out for me, plus his production in his final season. He's going to be the wide receiver one right away. I mean, Alshon's not that guy anymore. Marquise Goodwin is a deep field threat. Probably together, him and DeSean Jackson will make one full deep threat for them. And then they got a couple later round guys too. But so, yeah, I mean, it's probably Reagor and the two tight ends that are going to be the reliable ones. Manny Sanders as well, if they're going to use him in the pass catching role. So I think it's him or Jefferson that are the wide receiver one for their rookie season. The rookie wide receiver one, not the wide receiver one.
Right. Yeah. I get that. And it's just funny to see that team that's kind of been a story for years. Basically, Carson Wentz's entire career that they're trying to find him a speed guy, a deep threat. They had Alshon. They had these kind of underneath possession type guys. They tried to trade for Robbie Anderson like every year, basically. That never happened. They get D-Jax back. He gets hurt. Like, everything they did just didn't work out for one reason or another. And they went into this draft like set to make sure that never happens again, right? They've got a 4x1 team now that, I mean, they've Rager, one of the fastest receivers in this rookie class. Now, honestly, probably one of the fastest receivers in the league already. They trade for Goodwin, who I'm pretty sure was an actual Olympian.
Yes,
he was. I think, yeah.
And a long jumper, yeah.
Right. So, and then they took a couple other guys late. Hightower was one who had a pretty decent 40 time. I mean, they have built a track team, and they are not going they're never going to lack for speed again, at least not for the next few years.
And they even have a Taysom Hill replacement, apparently. They have somebody who they envision what? Using.
What? I'm going, you and I, you knew exactly what you were doing when you said that shit.
I did. But this God is the reason.
It, Eitan.
This is why I said what I said about Jalen Hurts when I said it. I thought that he could be a good quarterback. I actually thought the best case scenario was him ending up behind somebody like Dak in Dallas that was going to give him the opportunity to be the same type of quarterback, because I think that those two are kind of doppelgangers for one another. But the issue that I had with Jalen Hurts is I thought that Jalen Hurts could only be a viable fantasy quarterback if he ended up on a team that was actually willing to go ahead and change their system and make him a starter quickly. I don't think he landed in that situation in Philadelphia, and I think that was one of the reasons why he was such a volatile pick at the top of the second. I think you could still find him potentially in the second round, but it's going to be towards the later half of the second round, just because whether or not he sees the field anytime soon is definitely a question that's up in the air at this point.
I'm still very upset by that pick. I blame Frank Reich. I thought Frank Reich was the best place to land, or Indianapolis was the best place for them to land. And he just didn't want to be creative with Tua Jalen Hurts apparently. But honestly, if he had landed in a place like Indy, I think he would have shot up draft boards. But no, he landed behind a young quarterback who put up an MVP type season 2 years ago, has still been a decent quarterback without any wide receivers. My only hope for Jalen Hurts right now is that Carson Wentz either gets hurt, which I'm not saying I'm hoping for, by the way, everybody. I'm not hoping for Carson Wentz to get hurt, or that's probably it. Yeah, actually. Or they don't sign him after 2021. Because sign Carson Wentz after 2021 again. So maybe they see him as a 2-year project, which I'm fine with. But I hate it so much. I'm crying on the inside.
Yeah, it was a curious pick for sure. It felt like a luxury pick, but that team didn't have the luxury to make that pick. I know a lot of people are questioning the fit, the draft capital. I don't have any issue with the draft capital. I thought he would go in the second round. I wouldn't have been surprised if he went in the first round, honestly. So I don't question that. I just question the fit. And I'm not a huge Jalen Hurts fan overall, but I would have liked to see him land in a different offense. I don't think he's the next Taysom Hill. I think the Saints drafted the Taysom Hill replacement in the 7th round in Tommy Stevens. They traded back up into the draft. They were out of draft picks. They had been for multiple rounds, and they get Tommy Stevens, and he's the next Taysom Hill to me, if there is one in this class.
Yeah, I mean, if the New Orleans Saints had made the Jalen Hurts pick, then I think it would be something different entirely, because then at least you can see a pathway to relevance for a guy like that. Even if that's not necessarily the team that's built for a mobile quarterback, I think Sean Payton's creative enough to have done something with that in a year's time if that was where they decided to go. But yeah, he just seems buried right now in a situation that's not going to allow him to showcase his talents, which was always the question with Taysom Hill, or with keep saying Taysom Hill, with Jalen Hurts.
I'm going to slap the shit out of you if I ever meet you in person.
Hey, don't be mad just because you were wrong. I'm sorry.
I wasn't wrong. They made a, like Ryan said, they made a curious and what felt like a luxury pick. Like it was like, oh, well, we're pretty good everywhere else. We need a backup quarterback who could step in and be successful right away. And Jalen Hurts was the guy. But like I said, they didn't have any luxury picks. There's still a lot of holes on that team. So,
right. Unfortunately, it doesn't matter what we think. It doesn't matter what the draft Knicks think about what the pick. All that matters is what the GMs of the teams that we're actually drafting thought. And this is the situation we now find ourselves in. But now we can go on to what's going to be our last question of the 5-point inspection. I have more here, but we're going to save these for a future week. Every year, there's this one ghost offense that nobody gives a crap about. Nobody thinks about going into the next season that just has tons and tons and tons of value to mine. A couple seasons ago, that was Los Angeles Rams. Last season, at least for a little while, DJ Chark would make me think that the Jacksonville Jaguars, for at least a moment, were that offense with a bunch of value to be mined that people didn't really think about because people were downplaying Leonard Fournette as well as DJ Chark last year. You saw how that turned out. What is the ghost offense this season that is just going to rise up from absolutely nowhere to be a very, very fantasy relevant landing spot for not even just some of these rookies, but also some of the veterans on their rosters that maybe people are just discounting at the current moment?
I'm going to take kind of the layup answer here. I think it's the Denver Broncos. I mean, this is a team who was what, guys, 28th in scoring last year.
It was good. We had fun. I had fun last year watching the Broncos.
Yeah. So, I mean, the moves they made, they bring in Melvin Gordon, of course, the draft picks, back-to-back wide receivers in rounds 1 and 2, Jerry Jeudy, KJ Hamler. They add Albert O later. Looking at their fantasy production last year, overall, it was pretty ugly, right? Quarterback 34, they kind of split the quarterback role between between Joe Flacco and Drew Lock and I don't know, Stompy, whoever.
Brandon Allen. Ugh. God damn it.
So Flacco ends up as their top scoring quarterback. He's QB 34 on the season. Philip Lindsay, a little bit of a disappointment. Running back 19, solid. That was fine. Freeman, RB 36. Sutton has his breakout year that we were all hoping for. Wide receiver 19, very solid there. After Sutton, their second best wide receiver was wide receiver 95. So that's why they take Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler with their first two picks and just trying to rebuild that wide receiver core. In short form, they've got Noah Fant, tight end 16 as a rookie. They add Albert O. We know the relationship there between he and Locke from their Missouri days. So it's kind of like all systems go here. This is an exciting roster all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, the word around the Denver Broncos has been that, yeah, they took a lot of playmakers for Drew Locke, but they didn't really do much to shore up that offensive line. But looking a little bit more into it, I don't even know if that's the case, because they took a center in the third round that I think is going to be an instant starter for them. Natan Muti that they took in the sixth round, injuries aside, was probably one of the most dominant offensive guards in the NFL draft so far that we've seen. So if these guys can stay healthy, then I think that they've significantly upgraded the offensive line as well. I was having this conversation with Stompy the other day. We actually just had John Lobb on the show, and we talked about the Denver Broncos just a little bit. But with everything that the Broncos have to offer a guy like Drew Lock, I'm not even super interested in knowing whether or not Drew Lock is that good as a quarterback. I just think if he's mobile, if he can create any time for these guys to get open, then he's just going to have easy throws all day that any college quarterback should be able to complete with the weapons that are available in Alberto Wegmanham, in Noah Fant, in KJ Hamler, in Jerry Jeudy, and in Courtland Sutton, that it's just going to be a relatively easy time for him. So I think for that reason, you have to be excited about Drew Lock in this offense. And I wouldn't absolutely be against signing a guy like Cam Newton to back him up just in case things go south injury wise, to see if he can just keep the good times rolling if something like that happens this season. But yeah, I can see for the first time in a long time, a pretty easy 10-win team coming to Denver. Snoppy, do you agree with that?
I mean, so just on the offensive line, they signed Graham. Just forgot his name again. The guard. Eitan, you're supposed to be helping me. You're a Broncos fan.
I know. You Graham should know Glasgow. The names of Broncos players.
Graham right? Glasgow. They signed Graham Glasgow. They get Juwan James back at right tackle. And that was the biggest hole on their offensive line last season. Not Garrett Bowles, like everybody likes to say. And like you said, they drafted a center, and I think they were ranked 12th by PFF. They were 11th in adjusted line yards. They're going to be better this year, and they have better weapons. So, yeah, I mean, I called Drew Lock as my breakout quarterback this season, the guy I'm touting before the draft, and then the draft happened, and I was like, oh man, I'm a little excited. Potentially a top 10 QB this season. We'll see with Pat Shurmur. That's the other addition. They have Pat Shurmur as well, who's as much as he's not a great head coach, he's a great offensive coordinator. Regardless, I love where this team's going. I got my hopes way too high right now, so I need to stop talking.
With KJ Hamler and Henry Ruggs drafted in the same division, is everybody just trying to chase the next Tyreek Hill?
Probably. I mean, I think you have to match what the Kansas City Chiefs have done on offense. Like, they proved it last season. You don't need to have a great defense to win the Super Bowl. You need to have a mediocre defense. I don't necessarily agree with that philosophy, but they did it. Now, so basically what that means is you have to build an offense that can keep up in terms of points. So now you get Courtland Sutton, you get Jerry Jeudy, and now you have KJ Hamler, who can serve as that Tyreek Hill type role and can be in the slot as well. You also sign Melvin Gordon and have Phillip Lindsay. So I think the Broncos are retooled enough to compete with Kansas City. I'm not saying they're going to win the AFC West. I'm just saying that they will compete with Kansas City for the AFC West.
Yeah, it'll be exciting times in Denver. I'm certainly looking forward to that. It's been a long time since we've had an offense that we can actually write home about, and I think this might be the 1 year that we get that since the Peyton Manning about a year before he retired year. So now let's go ahead and get into the most important part of every single episode. We're going to plug in the analyzer and get to this week's Dynasty Diagnostic. And our episode 69, nice roster, was submitted by Josh Eichler? I don't know.
No, I think it's Eichler.
Anyway, Josh, you can find him at Josh Eichler.
We appreciate your support. We're just going to call you Eichler, Josh Eichler.
Just like Albert Ogwegmunam, everybody calls him Albert O. I'm just going to call you Josh E from now on, so I hope that's okay. But you can find him on Twitter at Josh Eichler. Please be sure to give him a follow. And if you want to be part of next week's show, go ahead and follow the podcast at Dino Diagnostic. Smash that subscribe button and leave us a review on iTunes. We would very much appreciate it. So let's get into the roster. It is an 18-team point per reception start. One quarterback, two running backs, two wide receivers, one tight end, and two flex roster. And at quarterback, we have Josh Allen, Kyle Allen, Andy Dalton, and Gardner, the shoe, Minshew. I think we're fine at quarterback here, fellas. I think Josh Allen is in line to be a top eight quarterback this year. I think it could even potentially be a top five quarterback with the way that Brandon positioning the guys and Josh Allen's rushing ability.
It's not going to happen anytime.
What do you guys think about this quarterback room? We're going to start with the person who I know doesn't hate Josh Allen.
I don't hate Josh Allen.
Hey, stop it. Stop it.
Yeah, this, I mean, for an 18-team league, this is a pretty strong roster. You've got a top, let's call him a top 10 quarterback, top 10 dynasty quarterback in Josh Allen. You've got Gardner Minshew, who's a solid backup in this league format. And then you just hope Andy Dalton lands somewhere. But yeah, in this large of a league, it's hard to complain with this quarterback group.
Listen, all right, Snappy.
Listen,
don't talk about your heretical ways.
In terms of fantasy football, Josh Allen is great. I'm not saying he's going to be a top five guy. Top eight, I was fine with. You got into the top five, and I was like, can't do it. Nope, can't support that. Regardless, I have drafted him plenty of times because I still think he's pretty underrated in terms of dynasty quarterbacks. So I've gotten him as my QB1 in a few leagues this offseason. Nothing else to add here. Gardner Minshew's going to be a fine bye week fill and might be a spot starter here or there. And Josh Allen, like Eitan said, top eight quarterback potential, but really he's a top 10. He's bound to finish in the top 10 if he stays healthy.
All right, guys, at running back, we have some winners and we have some losers in this running back group. Tevin Coleman would have to qualify for me as a winner just because of the divergence from the team, from Matt Breda. He is now a Miami Dolphin. He's kind of solidified himself as the number two behind Raheem Mostert in that backfield for now, until we see another signing made. There is still a certain guy out of Atlanta that's still waiting out there that hasn't quite been signed yet, so we can see what happens there. But for the time, it looks like Tevin Coleman is the definite running back two on that team. Miles Sanders looks entrenched as the definite running back one. Now, word from Philadelphia is that they are still looking for a veteran back to pair with him, so I don't necessarily know if that's going to be the split that most people would want to assume that Miles Sanders is going to get, just based on the history of that coaching staff and how they like to use a committee, but he would have to be a definite winner as well. But I said there were some losers too, and those losers are definitely Kerryon Johnson, now paired with DeAndre Swift in a backfield on a team that doesn't seem to know what it's doing. And then you have Marlon Mack. We just talked about whether or not he's even dead. I don't think he is. I think he still has some value this year, but it's going to be hard-pressed to get carries in front of a guy that the Indianapolis Colts actually traded up to draft in Jonathan Taylor. So what does this running back group mean to you? Are you absolutely afraid of what this could become? Or is this at least a solid platform maybe to add one or two more guys to make it a little bit more palatable for you, Ryan?
Yeah, I certainly would like to add some here. And in an 18-team league, that's certainly not going to be easy. I mean, you've got to start two every week plus two flex options. So it's, I mean, some of those starting lineups are just going to be ugly, honestly. And at running back, this might be one of them. I love Sanders locked in as an RB1. That's a great option. I think you just have to look at Coleman, Kerryon, and Marlon Mack and hope you end up getting one of those guys retaining some value, maybe even gaining some value. I actually still like Tevin Coleman. I think we're giving up on him a little bit too soon, especially in that offense that wants to build around the run.
This before the draft, this looked like a very good RB room. After the draft, this looks terrible. But I mean, like Ryan said, 18 team, it's actually not the worst. I still expect Kerryon Johnson to have some sort of role in Detroit, at least in this first year with Swift. Ryan makes a good point that Marlon Mack probably still has a role with a rookie quarterback. I mean, Jonathan Taylor is going to be the RB1 there, but I still expect Marlon Mack to be able to take some carries, so it's not the worst. Miles Sanders probably takes a step forward. They already have the handcuff to him there in Boston Scott, so don't need to worry about that. Plus, Boston Scott's going to get some touches you can go look for in an 18 team. Boston Scott and Justin Jackson, go look for those two in an 18 team. So the depth is is not great, but I don't know how much better you're going to get in an 18 team league. So honestly, when you actually take the context into consideration, it's not the worst running back room, but I'm not comfortable with it, I suppose.
All right. So for wide receivers, we got the GOAT, Corey Davis, followed by another one that should be well-regarded by all Dynasty owners, and N'Keal Harry. DeAndre Hopkins is on the squad. Christian Kirk, who's going to be playing on the same team, is on the same Dynasty team as well. DJ Moore, he is within a shout of being this year's Chris Godwin, this year's top five wide receiver. Not that people didn't see coming, but that people kind of expected. Tre'Quan Smith, I don't know if he has a role anymore because of the presence of Emmanuel Sanders. And Robert Woods, you have to assume that his targets pie is just going to increase with the departure of Brandon Cooks and him being probably the fastest wide receiver on that team as currently constructed. So what do we think about this wide receiver group as a whole? I'll start. I'm not going to really put any stock into Corey Davis. You guys already know that. We don't have to run through that again. I think N'Keal Harry is still alone. As long as he's a one-man band, I think that's going to be somewhat decent for N'Keal Harry, regardless of who's throwing him the football. I don't expect fireworks, but I expect some level of production because if it's just him and Jacoby Myers and Julie Edelman holding the fort down, I think that team is going to have to rely on somebody. Christian Kirk and DeAndre Hopkins, obviously, I think we talked about DeAndre Hopkins maybe ceiling dropping off just a little bit out in Arizona because of the presence of other capable wide receivers that he hasn't necessarily had to deal with in the past on a Houston roster that's always kind of been devoid of a clear wide receiver too because of injuries. Now he has that in Christian Kirk. Larry Fitzgerald is still there as well. Andy Isabella was one of the more exciting receivers that didn't get much run last year, but we expect his role to increase. So we could see some good things still coming from DeAndre Hopkins, but I think the ceiling has been neutered just a little bit. Christian Kirk, I think if anything, his value has probably stayed the same just because I do think that four wide sets are used so often that that team is going to give him every chance to be a valued receiver all over again. We talked about DJ Moore and how DJ Moore should be dominant this year. And Robert Woods kind of rounds this out. In an 18-team league, starting those four guys, Hopkins, Kirk, Moore, and Woods, to me would seem like one of the top three to four wide receiver groups in the league. Do you guys have any disagreement with this, or is there a guy that you'd look to move or bring on the squad to change it up a little bit?
I totally agree. I mean, this, if I've got a 12 team, if I'm in a 12 team league with this wide receiver core, I'm pretty happy. Hopkins, DJ Moore, Robert Woods, a solid, very solid starting three every week. N'Keal Harry and Christian Kirk as kind of your upside guys there. I do think I would consider moving one of those potentially for a running back because this looks like a team that should compete at the very least compete for a playoff spot and maybe be a strong contender. Christian Kirk would be the guy I would shop and see what kind of running back help you could get for that.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great wide receiver room. You have two top 10 options in Hopkins and Moore. Robert Woods, the ever underrated wide receiver who's going to be the wide receiver one in LA again. Yes, he is the wide receiver one.
He's not the wide receiver one. He's the wide receiver 1B, but we're not going to go there.
He's one, but it's okay. And then upside guys, I agree with Ryan. I would be trading somebody like I would honestly be trading DeAndre Hopkins because I think he takes a little bit of a hit over these next few seasons in Arizona. I still think he's a top 10 wide receiver, but I think his value is still pretty high after that trade. So if you could get a maybe not elite tier running back, but kind of one of those second or third level running backs and maybe a lesser wide receiver, I would feel pretty good about that because you get more help at running back and you don't lose too much at wide receiver. We're not going to go over the IDP side of things, but there's also some stuff you can trade on the IDP side, I think, specifically at linebacker that I think like KJ Wright, you could probably trade to help get wide receiver depending on how heavy that scoring is. It doesn't look overtly heavy, but looks rather important for your league. So we won't go over those guys, but I would definitely think about that as well.
Yeah, there's just a lot to like in this wide receiver room. It's just kind of one of those situations where we can see that there's been a clear focus on that team to make that a strength of this team, and I think that you very much accomplished that. So kudos. Kudos, man. Let's go to tight ends. Evan Engram, the presumptive tight end 4, tight end 5, potentially even tight end 3, if health permits. Health has been the issue with him, but every time he's been on the field, he's been an absolute difference maker. So Evan Engram is definitely a good way to start this tight end group, followed by Dallas Goedert. We just talked about the lack of weapons in Philadelphia. If Alshon Jeffrey is indeed not a member of the team going into the presumptive 2020 season, because we still don't know what coronavirus will do, but if that is the case, then Dallas Goedert is just going to be in line for even more targets than he received last year. And as Ryan just stated earlier, both him and Zach Ertz were top 10 or top 12 options at the position last year. So I think we can expect the same. Foster Moreau, the incoming Jason Witten, paired with Darren Waller, probably put a damper on what he could potentially be this season. But, I mean, that's not a bad depth option. I would think that at tight end, you're pretty stocked as well. I think the only real issue of worry here on this squad is running back. So in all these positions, in wide receiver and in tight end, I think that you have enough ammo if you want to go ahead and trade an offensive piece and not worry about the IDPs. You have enough ammo to go out and get a running back at this point. So let's instead talk about that. If there's a running back that you have to add to this team, who is that guy that you think fits the archetype of what this team particularly needs at the running back position?
Yeah, I mean, for me, when I'm acquiring running backs in Dynasty League, I'm either drafting them in rookie drafts or I'm trading for cheap veterans, honestly. I mean, I'm not going to be the one to pay up for Barkley or really any top 5, top 10 running back. Just not the way I play. So, I mean, if this is my team, I'm looking at Melvin Gordon. I'm looking at Todd Gurley as guys who have they've lost value over the past couple of years due to age, due to injuries, but both in new situations. Neither saw a running back drafted by their team last week, so I think their role is safe at least for the next year, for 2020, and that's kind of the play I would make.
You and I are wildly different. I'm one of those guys that believes in getting running backs early in startups. You're right. I likely won't trade for most veterans. But like guys, like I think Kenyon Drake is relatively undervalued. Philip Lindsay is a guy that you can grab that is still going to get work, but he's going way late. I mean, on DLF ADP before the signing of Melvin Gordon, Philip Lindsay was going as RB31. 2 Pro Bowls, the dude's going as RB31. So I still think he's got some he's got some value. He will get some touches next season. Another guy, Raheem Mostert, is a guy that would be a good guy to trade for, because I don't think anybody's really thinking about that he's the starter. Even at his age, he proved to be the starter last season. I would have said Damian Williams before the draft, but even now, like, I still think he's going to get decent amount of touches this next season. So yeah, I mean, that's the way I would be going. Honestly, I would look at trading one of Engram or Goddard. I think Engram to get an upper tier starter, because there you have 2 second round picks, which I think you can trade one of them to get a lower tier tight end. Hey, Eitan, you want to tell him which tight end I'm talking about?
If we talk about Jack Doyle,
it's going to be Jack Doyle, baby.
One more time. Like, I will end this episode.
No, you won't. You love Jack Doyle. But like guys like that who you don't necessarily need the starting type or those top 12 types, but you get a guy who can fill in here and there. And I think you look pretty good. Jonnu Smith, Ian Thomas, still Jared Cook, Blake Jarwin. They're all going pretty late. So if that's the route I'm going to go, I'm going to trade somebody like Ingram to get a running back, help me get a better running back. And then I'll use one of my seconds to get a tight end.
Yeah, Blake Jarwin and Tyler Higbee are the guys that I'm looking at tight end. I just think that you're going to get some value there. Anything that Snoppy says about Jack Doyle from here on out, I want you guys to just completely ignore.
80-plus targets this season, bet. 80-plus targets.
But we have now come to the part of the episode that is the most important part of the episode. We are a service center, after all. We have brought Ryan McDowell into our service center to go ahead and look at this project that we have working on. So, Ryan McDowell, in your best card terms, you've seen this roster. You've seen how it breaks down. You've seen all of the different bits and pieces that make this up. What is this team to you in card terms? Are we looking at like a spaceship here? Is this a Maserati? Or are we looking more like a Honda Civic that maybe has a couple busted out windows, maybe missing a wheel or two that was probably parked on the wrong block last week?
Oh man, this I forgot about this, guys. I forgot how embarrassed I am at my lack of manliness, my lack of car knowledge.
We embarrass ourselves
weekly, every week,
literally every week with this. We've been doing this for over a year. I still don't know anything about cars. I just make it up. You know, you put the blinker fluid in, and then you're on your way.
Yeah, I should have faked it. I should have faked it there. Okay, so it's I don't think we're quite at Maserati status here, but I think we definitely have something to work with. We're one piece away. What is that, Stompy? What's one piece away look like?
Like
as far as that,
your alternator's going out, so you're starting to notice your lights are dimming a little bit, okay. And you're like, okay, well, I don't want this to die on the road. Let's just go get an alternator, and I'll be good.
Okay, that sounds good. That's it.
I'm going to go a little bit more dystopian because of the time we live in, because this is an 18 team league and it's such a grueling process to find guys. It's kind of like, you know, those Mad Max cars that are like kind of souped out with stuff. And you need, like Mad Max to go out on the engine and start spitting gasoline into the engine to make it go faster. That's kind of what you're missing right here now, is that Mad Max spitting gasoline into the engine. And I think that's just at running back. Everything else, you're great. I just, to be more comfortable, especially in 18 team, I think you need another running back that can go in and go out with the starters.
Yeah. We got a Hummer running on fumes here. I mean, this has got the build for this new dystopia that we live on. We can go over all the other obstacles that we need to deal with. We can run the other cars off the road. We can Tallahassee stuff like he did in Zombieland and just completely go through it if we need to. But this thing's a gas guzzler, all right? This thing needs some help at running back. This thing has a serious leak that we haven't dealt with. And until that is fixed, we're going to be in a situation where we're just not going to be able to get this thing to move. So I think the body is here. Everything that you want in the automobile is here, but there's still something definite that you need to do to improve this for any chances at being a real contender this season. This, if you keep DeAndre Hopkins, happens to also be one of those rosters that can be looking a little bit bent out of shape next year if things don't necessarily fall your way. If Miles Sanders isn't the RB1 we expect him to, if DeAndre Hopkins takes more of a hit than we think he's going to take moving to an offense with other value targets in that offense, this is a car that's kind of on a knife's edge of sorts. So you need to be very careful with what you do with this roster going forward. But I think as Scompy and as Ryan has said, yeah, you've got something pretty nice here to work with. You can move this along quite well. You just have to be very cognizant of the moves that you make to go ahead and improve this for future seasons very, very soon. But that is going to be where we come to our conclusion this time round. Before we return the keys, Ryan, like I said, he's an absolute beast in the industry. He's a goat in the industry. He's the co-owner of DLF. I don't even know if this is something new at this point. This is something that's kind of been established for a while. Ryan, do you have anything to let the good people know about?
Yeah, we're just continuing to churn out content, mostly rookie content right now over at Dynasty League Football, not only on the website, but also on our YouTube channel. That is something fairly new. I've got a new show over there with Dan Myler talking ADP, so we'll be talking about rookie ADP, startup ADP, all of that. Yeah, just check out DLF.
Perfect. You can also be made sure to go ahead and find Ryan on Twitter at RyanMC23. You can find myself at Eitan Alive. You can find Sam at FF Stompy. And Sam, do you have anything to say quickly before we go ahead and round this thing out?
Go check out our Patreon. Search Dino Diagnostic on Patreon or patreon.com/dinodiagnostic. Help us out. We put a decent amount of work in here. It's not our job, so be helpful if we had a little bit of money for our time and effort and equipment. You get access to a chat. You can get a t-shirt, among other things. So go check that out at Patreon. And then go to, and I just forgot the name, storeenvy.com and search for FF Pod Shirts. What are you going to say to me?
Literally written on the show.
I'm not reading your script, Eitan. You can't control me, Eitan. storeenvy.com, search FF Pod Shirts, get shirts from us, from Trade Addicts, from Superflex Show, from a bunch of other ones. There's a few other podcasts in there. Support us, but also 10% goes to Fantasy Cares. So not only are you supporting this podcast and others, you are also supporting a great charity.
And that is going to be the end of our show today. Thank you so much, all you people out there, for making it to the Dynasty Diagnostic Service Center today. We are essential. We will keep working through this time. I hope everybody out there is having a decent time.
We are not essential. We're not essential. We are sitting in our houses.
We're still working. We're still working, Sam. So, hey, by definition.
Stop it. You know who's essential? Ryan McDowell, the teacher, is far more essential than you or I.
I will not disagree with that. I will not disagree with that. But love, thanks, support goes out to all those workers that are still holding it down during this time. That includes healthcare workers, that includes sanitation workers, that includes everybody out there that is still doing something positive for their communities. My girlfriend is actually doing a lot of virtual teaching sessions. I can imagine that a lot of teachers are doing the same thing right now. Shout outs to them. And I hope that we continue to all get through this and we continue to maintain social distancing enough to keep our population and our grandmothers and grandfathers and everyone else that's affected this pandemic affected to the least amounts that we possibly can. But I just wanted to use this time to go out and say thank you to all the people that are continuing to let the rest of us kind of get through this. Please be sure to keep up with your scheduled maintenance and catch us next time to ensure quality performance. And see you on your next.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see. It's the Dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty.
Diagnostic popped it, now your team is the topic. Eitan and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold, it is rolling a roll that I'm told. Comp a bowl to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks, yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks, yeah. How'd I get a lot of these stains on my seats, yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my Dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this, is it that, is it picks, is it bad? Do I even have a chance, do I got it in the bag? Let me know.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty.
tell me what you see. Tell me what you see. It's the dynasty.
Diagnostic, gnostic, gnostic, gnostic.